It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. I'm on the road, broadcasting. Here's what we have lined up. Lots of information. The latest on health and healing. Which damaging foods cause accelerated skin aging? We'll talk about that so you can avoid them if you choose. The omega-3, how they're going to affect people who smoke. Some exclusive information today. I haven't seen it anywhere else. Do you remember about 2.5 to 3 years ago, I did a program on what happens if there's a nuclear meltdown? Because none of the mathematical models of what we should be doing are going to work. And then right after the Fukushima disaster, and what motivated me to do the updated documentary, Knocking on the Devil's Door, I said, Japan's a relatively small place. They have a high concentration of people, especially around Tokyo, which is the most congested, largest population city in the world, upwards of 39 to 40 million people. Where are they going to put them? Now, they only have one of three choices. A is just be completely honest with the public. As they find out what is happening, inform the public. B, lie to the public because you don't have a plan B. So you can't help the people. You haven't stockpiled food or water. You don't have a place for people to move to where enough people could actually have any quality of life at all. So if you have no place to put people, tell them that there's not a problem. Or C, bring in the world's finest experts and try to contain the vessels by putting them into, in effect, a concrete and steel and titanium and lead coffin. So if there is further breakdown, the radioactive material is not going to go into the air. They chose to do number two. They chose to lie. And all the studies and reports show that Japanese government are just pathological lying all the time about this, as is the utility. Okay, but what does that mean? Here is the latest on this, and this you haven't heard before. This is from the European Union Times. Russia is stunned by Japanese plan to evacuate 40 million. A new report, which is circulating today, prepared by the Foreign Ministry on the planned reopening of the talks with Japan over the disputed Kuril Islands during the next fortnight, states that Russian diplomats were stunned after being told by their Japanese counterparts that upwards of 40 million of their peoples were in extreme danger of life-threatening radiation poisoning and could very well be faced with forced evacuations away from their country's easternmost located cities. By the way, that would include the largest, which is Tokyo. The Kuril Islands are located in Russia's region right by the... Well, they're about 800 miles northeast of Japan's area, and they're separated by a sea that the... There are about 56 islands in all. They're not very large. All of those islands were captured by the Soviet Union in the closing days of World War II from the Japanese. Well, this so-called extreme danger facing tens of millions of Japanese people is the result of the Fukushima nuclear disaster. And that was because of a series of equipment failures, nuclear meltdowns, and releases of radioactive materials at the Fukushima 1 nuclear power plant. Now, according to the report that I'm sharing with you now, Japanese diplomats have signaled to their Russian counterparts that the returning of the Kuril Islands to Japan is critical, as they have no other place to resettle so many people that would, in essence, become the largest migration of human beings since the 1930s, when Soviet leader Stalin forced tens of millions to resettle Russia's far eastern regions. Now, it's important to note this report continues that the Japanese diplomats told their Russian counterparts that they were also seriously considering an offer by China to relocate tens of millions of their citizens to the Chinese mainland to inhabit what are called the ghost cities. Now, these were built for reasons that we still haven't been made fully aware of. And even the London Daily Mail Service carried a story about the ghost towns of China and satellite images show cities meant to be home to millions lying deserted. Well, these amazing satellite images show sprawling cities built in remote parts of China that have been left completely abandoned, sometimes years after their construction. They're very elaborate public buildings and open spaces and completely unused. And there's as many as 64 million homes unused. And there's up to 20 new cities being built every year in the country's vast swaths of free land. Now, why? Are they moving their populations there? The answer is, in most cases, no. So foreign ministry experts in this report note that Japan, if it accepts China's offer, the combined power of these two Asian peoples would make them the largest superpower in human history, with an economy larger than that of the United States and the European Union combined. And so then, how dire is the situation in Japan? Forget the American media. Forget our White House. Forget everyone in Washington. They're all pathological liars. They're never going to tell you the truth. Because if they did so, then someone would finally point up, well, aren't we also operating nuclear power plants built by the same engineers, the same companies? Don't we also have similar defects in ours? And the answer is yes, we do. So to point up what a worst-case scenario is in Japan may also have to point up what a worst-case scenario would be in the United States. And we just refuse to do that. There's just too much money into too many politicians' pockets, scientists' pockets, and they own and control virtually everything about the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Now, according to Prison Planet News Service, quote, this was an entry posted on a blog in a statement by Japan's former ambassador to Switzerland, Murata, on the situation at Fukushima. Speaking at a public hearing of the Budgetary Committee of the House of Counselors on March 22nd of this year, Murata warned, quote, if the crippled building of reactor unit 4 with 1,535 fuel rods in the spent fuel pool of 100 feet above ground collapses, not only will it cause a shutdown of all six reactors, but it will also affect the common spent fuel containing 6,375 fuel rods located some 50 meters from reactor 4, end quote. Now, in both cases, the radioactive rods are not protected by a containment vessel. Dangerously, they are open to the air. This would certainly cause a global catastrophe like we have never experienced before, ever. And he stressed that the responsibility of Japan to the rest of the world is immeasurable. Such a catastrophe would affect all of us for centuries. Ambassador Murata informed us that the total number of spent fuel rods at the Fukushima site, excluding the rods in the pressure vessel, is 11,421 rods. That's hundreds of tons. Disturbingly, the desperate situation facing Japan is also facing the United States because some Russian military observers overflying the U.S. as part of the Open Skies Treaty are reporting unprecedented amounts of radiation in the western regions of that country, a finding that was further confirmed by scientists with the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, who have confirmed that a wave of highly radioactive waste is headed directly for the U.S. West Coast. Now, important to note is that this new wave of Fukushima radiation headed towards the United States is in addition to the earlier radiation events that American scientists are now blaming for radioactive particles from Japan being detected in California kelp. And though the news of this ongoing global catastrophe is still being heavily censored in the U.S., the same cannot be said about Japan because it's now breaking out in some of the news agencies where they're talking about how serious it is. This is just from one Japanese newspaper, the Manichia Daily News. Quote, one of the biggest issues we face is the possibility that the spent nuclear fuel pool of number 4 reactor at the stricken Fukushima number 1 nuclear power plant will collapse. This is something that experts from both within and outside Japan have pointed out since the massive quake struck. TEPCO, meanwhile, says that the situation is under control. However, not only independent experts, but also sources within the government say that it's of grave concern. Now, the storage pool in the number 4 reactor building has a total of 1,535 fuel rods, or 460 tons of nuclear fuel in it. The 7-story building itself has suffered great damage, with the storage pool barely intact on the building's 3rd and 4th floors. The roof has been blown away. If the storage pool breaks and runs dry, the nuclear fuel inside overheat and explode, causing a massive amount of radiation to spread over a wide area. Both the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the French nuclear energy company Areva have warned about the risk. The report released in February by the Independent Investigative Commission on the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear accident stated the storage pool of the plant's number 4 reactor has clearly been shown to be, quote, the weakest link in the parallel chain reaction crisis of the nuclear disaster. The worst-case scenario drawn up by the government includes not only the collapse of number 4 reactor pool, but the disintegration of spent fuel rods from all the plant's reactors. If this were to happen, residents in Tokyo would have to evacuate immediately, or they would suffer radiation poisoning. So quietly and outside of the United States media, since we haven't done a single story on it, no one's asked, where do you put 100 million people if things get so bad that life is untenable for them there? What about all their industries? How do you rebuild industries? That you can do. But where do you relocate people? Where do you give them housing and food? How do you feed 50, 40, 100 million people? And this is what happens when we don't think that a worst-case scenario can happen. So there's a high probability that if any other earthquake happens that's registering 7 or higher, that the remaining buildings there will collapse. If that does, then you've got a catastrophic situation that no one's planned for, no one is planning for. Now, similarly, no one is taking seriously the latest on solar storms. I was just early this morning writing a new updated version of our story, which will be up there today, on how serious can this storm be and what we can do pre-storm and post-storm to survive, and also the latest science on it, and how even a group of scientists met quietly in Florida this week to discuss this. But they're really not doing anything about it. They're discussing it, but not doing anything about it. And of course, everything is kept top secret. Why keep all this information secret from the American public? Shouldn't they know? They should know, but what if you don't have a plan B? For example, in New York City. And within 50 miles of New York City, there are 20 million people. Forget the 6 to 7 million that live in Manhattan, in the boroughs, 8 million, in the immediate area, 10 million. You're dealing with 20 million people. Where are they going to go? How are they going to get there? What are you going to give them for food and water? It's not possible. So you simply don't talk about it, as if by not talking about it, discussing it, it'll go away. This isn't going away. The solar storm is coming within the next 12 to 14 months. And those who are prepared for it have a chance of surviving if it's a worst-case scenario. Now, if it's not a worst-case scenario, good. Then what does it cost us to be prepared? Very little. More on that on an upcoming program. Now, the latest on health and nutrition. So remember, at some point in the future, you'll hear about what the Japanese and Chinese have been doing, the Japanese and the Russians, but you will not have heard it in the American media or even the alternative media. Quinoa, it's a delicious grain, very light grain, very quick to prepare. You can use it in salads and dishes. Well, it turns out that it's very good for runners. And this is from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And it says, this time of year when so many are observing about eating less in an effort to fit into their shorts and bathing suits, it's all I can do not to think about food and how much of it I can possibly stuff in my mouth. Spring ushers in the start of racing season, the city's biggest running event, the Pittsburgh Marathon. And with it, the long weekend training runs that make my fellow distance runners, me, feel so very hungry. This year, a record-breaking 25,000 have signed up for the city's full and half marathons. Over 56% are women. That means there's a whole bunch of people rooting around in their refrigerators, pantries, looking for something tasty with which to fuel and refuel their hardworking bodies. And then they talk about pastas, but then they talk about quinoa and how quinoa is one of those foods that is light on your metabolism, easy to digest, inexpensive, and yet terrific when it comes to providing energy. So that's good. I'm glad to see that they're realizing quinoa is just loaded with amino acids, calcium, iron, fiber, potassium, folate, magnesium. It's only got about 220 calories per cup, and it's gluten-free, so have quinoa. Now, in that same vein, fiber is good because fiber protects us against heart disease, and a new study shows that it's really good for women to protect you against heart disease. Quote, high-fiber foods may offer good protection against cardiovascular disease with the effects particularly marked in women. And this is based upon 20,000 people in this Swedish study done at Lund University in Sweden. And they looked at all kinds of variables. Quote, women who ate a diet high in fiber had almost 25% lower risk of suffering from a cardiovascular disease than women who ate a low-fiber diet. So high fiber is good for you. 30 to 50 milligrams a day or grams a day are what you want. Also, the omega-3 fatty acids can reduce the damage from smoking. Now, let's say you can't give up smoking or know someone that you want to stop smoking, but they won't. According to this study that was in Greece, and it was only a four-week supplementation of 2 grams per day of the omega-3 fatty acids, it actually protected the arterial walls of those who smoked. So get the people in your life who smoke who won't stop to take 2,000 milligrams a day or 2 grams a day of the omega-3 fatty acids. Now, for those of you who are stuck on sodas, and the warmer it gets, the more sodas people, especially teenagers, consume, here's the latest from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Researchers from Cleveland Clinic's Wellness Institute and Harvard University have found that the greater consumption of sugar-sweetened and low-calorie sodas is associated with a higher risk of stroke. Stroke. So, important, get off the sodas. And they studied 43,000 men who participated in this study, and that's what they came up with. More sodas you drink, higher risk of getting a stroke. Now, no one wants to get wrinkled, and there's a lot we can do to protect our skin. Here's the latest. A list of things we can do. Of course, detoxifying is right at the top of the list, and having hormonal equilibrium is important. And a lot of people don't realize when you have thyroid problems and hormone fluctuations, and you're under stress, your skin shows it. But diet is the key because diet creates inflammation if it's bad and is anti-inflammatory if it's good. An anti-inflammatory diet is what you want. And this is the latest study on this that shows that when you have anti-inflammatory agents in your diet, like cucumbers and apples, that's a great juice to have in the morning. Also very good would be grapefruit and lemon. Great ways to start the day. Avocados, berries, nuts and seeds, green vegetables, green tea, garlic, ginger, cinnamon, turmeric. All of those are anti-inflammatory, and they help your skin. And one of the first things that people give me feedback when they're doing a detox is, gee whiz, look at my skin cleared up. I've had people with severe adult acne clear up their skin when they detox. And finally, consumption of green vegetables is linked with reduced cancer deaths. This is from The Independent in Ireland. And this was a study of 5,000 women over 5 years. And what they found was that those individual women who had the highest consumption of green vegetables had the lowest risk of developing cancer and dying from it. So that's a good study and good information. This was a part of the Shanghai Breast Cancer Survival Study. So have your veggies all throughout the day and juicing, exceptionally good and terrific for you. From our environmental segment, I've written an article, we update it regularly, on fluoride. It's called The Fluoride Fiasco. Here is the latest on why we should not be consuming fluoride in our mouthwash, toothpaste, or supplements. This is Mike Barrett, Natural Society. Top scientists, fluoride already shown to cause 10,000 cancer deaths. Quote, water fluoridation is a highly controversial topic, but many individuals voicing massive concern over the practice do not always understand the science behind it. In contrast, some stick to the concept that there isn't any association between fluoride and any real negative effects. Fluoride, however, is indeed a toxic substance and has been tied with numerous health complications in well-established research. Fluoride can be found in many water supplies, toothpaste, and even food at alarming levels. While it may sound shocking to many, some research is even drawing a close connection between fluoride and increased cancer risk. One scientific paper, Fluoride, a Modern Toxic Waste, says, quote, that Dr. Yamianis documents research showing that fluoride increases the growth rate of tumors by 25% at 1 part per million, produces tumors, transforms normal cells into cancer cells, and increases the carcinogenesis of other chemicals. Yep, that's true. In fact, Dr. Dean Burke, the former head of cytochemistry section at the National Cancer Institute, and Yamianis actually did a report together and presented on my radio show in 1977, talking about the increase in tumors. They said it was 20,000 at that time, and including developing of a rare bone cancer called osteosarcoma, and shown to increase the thyroid follicular cell tumors and develop a rare form of liver cancer. So stay away from the fluoride. Not good for us in any amount. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. No guest today, so we can take more of your calls. Now, here is our concept issue of the day, and I'm going to share this with you. This is from Mark Ames, Consortium News, and it's entitled Murder, Suicide, and Financial Ruin, How the Class War is Destroying American Lives. I'd like to get your input on this, so after I share this with you, please call in and share your points of view. Here's what it says. This past Thursday, Modesto, California, a man whose house was in foreclosure shot and killed the sheriff's deputy and the locksmith who came to evict him from his condominium unit. Modesto authorities responded by sending 100 police and SWAT snipers to counterattack, and it ended Waco style with the fourplex structure burning to the ground with a shooter inside. It's not surprising that this should happen in this city. Last year, the Central California city's foreclosure rate was the third worst in the country, with one in every 19 properties filing for foreclosure. The entire region is ravaged by unemployment, budget cuts, and blight. The only handouts that you're seeing are the surplus military equipment stocks being dumped into the police department's growing arsenal. The shooter who died was 45 years old, and he appears to have lost his condominium over a $15,000 home equity loan he took out almost a decade ago, owed to Bank America. The condo was sold at an auction for just $12,988 to a shady firm, RT Financial, that doesn't even have a listed contact number. Too much for the former security guard. He barricaded him in the condo, which had been in the family for decades. He refused to walk out alive. These deaths by foreclosure killings have been going on quietly around the country ever since the housing swindle first unraveled. Like the story of the 64-year-old Phoenix man whose daughter and grandson were preparing to move in with him after losing their home to foreclosure, only to get a knock on his door, surprising him with an eviction notice on his house that he'd owned for over 30 years. Bank of America foreclosed on him despite his attempts to work out a fair plan. We now know that the same banks that have been bailed out by the American consumer over their subprime fraud disasters were, by the time this happened, headlong into another criminal scheme, this time foreclosure fraud. The fraud was effected by illegally and in bad faith on a scale so vast it's hard to think that it was carried out by some marauding foreign army. Anyway, the old man grabbed a .357 and a beer, walked outside into a sea of Phoenix cops and snipers, and fired his gun off until they cut him down in hail of bullets. Sometimes the losers in this class war make it easier for everyone else by killing themselves and setting themselves on fire as they're being evicted, as one Ohio couple recently did. Other class warfare victims aren't as cooperative, like a Florida man who was gunned down by police after he set his foreclosed townhouse on fire last year. It's exactly the sort of lopsided class war that Warren Buffett first officially acknowledged in 2006. Quote, "There's class war," he said, "all right, but it's my class, the rich class, that's making war and we're winning." You bet, Warren. You always win, don't you? Buffett is right to call it a one-way war, in both a metaphorical sense and in a literal sense, given the endless wars being waged for over a decade now, wars that are tied to the class wars at home. Nothing illustrates the interlinking between the class war at home and the imperial wars abroad more starkly than the example of Staff Sergeant Roger Bales, the Army sniper accused last month of killing 17 Afghan civilians, mostly women and children. The Army is still trying to pin it all on Sergeant Bales' supposedly deranged mental state, but their version of events contradicts what the victims and eyewitnesses in the village have been telling the few reporters who have had the chance to actually interview them. They're saying that they saw several American soldiers participating in the massacre, as well as a helicopter. Whatever the case, whether alone or with others, most people familiar with the case agree that for some reason, Sergeant Bell snapped. Invariably, they're over-psychoanalyzing this, and the military has blamed it on everything from his supposedly troubled marriage to stress and strain to alleged alcohol bender. Less well-known or discussed is what happened to Sergeant Bales on the other front, the class war front. 3 days before his shooting rampage, the house where Bales' wife and two children lived in Tacoma, Washington, put up for a short sale, $50,000 underwater. This was exactly what Sergeant Bales and his wife feared might happen if the Army forced him into a fourth battlefield deployment. The last time Sergeant Bales deployed in Iraq in August 2009, Bank of America foreclosed on the family's rental property, a duplex that he and his wife had bought in 1999, that was also underwater. Within months of Bank of America's taking their duplex, Sergeant Bales' Humvee hit an IED and flipped over, causing brain and head injuries to him. On a previous deployment to Iraq, Sergeant Bales had one of his feet partially blown off by a bomb. Before being deployed to Afghanistan last year, he and his wife had been assured that the Army wouldn't force Sergeant Bales, a highly decorated hero who had already sacrificed his physical well-being and his family's financial health, back into combat. Bales and his wife were planning their future as a career military family on a base far away from combat zone, working up the Army's pay scale year by year. But then, in March 2011, a year before Sergeant Bales' massacre, they were shocked and hurt by the Army's decision to deny him his standard promotion to Sergeant First Class, which came with a much-needed pay raise. Last year, President Obama's Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman, Admiral Michael Mullen, said many of the austerity cuts would fall on soldiers' pay and benefits rather than slashing weapons programs and force levels, which he called, quote, relatively easy thing to do. When Bales learned he wouldn't get his promotion, his wife wrote on her blog, quote, "It was very disappointing, after all, of the work Bob had done and all the sacrifice he had made for his love of his country, family, and friends." Kathleen Bales comforted herself with the assurance that, be given at least, her husband wouldn't be sent back into combat again. At least the family would be going together to one of the many non-war zone bases around the world. She wrote, quote, "Who knows where we will end up? I just hope that we're able to rent out a house so we can keep it. I think we're both still in shock," unquote. Then came the real shock. The Army sent Sergeant Bales back to the war zone in Afghanistan. His wife would have to deal with the more than $500,000 in mortgage debts on her own. It was all timed perfectly. Last December, the month Sergeant Bells was deployed to Afghanistan, one of the subprime loans worth $178,000 taken out in 2006 was timed to reset at 10.8% interest. That's almost 11% interest. And they called in its first full payment. Joe Broomback, former president of Seattle Mortgage Bank Association, reviewed this loan and the other sold to Sergeant Bell's wife while he was in Iraq and denounced them as, quote, unconscionable. He told the Seattle Times, quote, the margins on these loans are a disaster waiting to happen, and admitted that mortgage lenders deliberately targeted military families like the Bales family, swindling them into signing on to far pricier refinancing loans, quote, that benefited lenders and mortgage brokers at the expense of vulnerable military families, as well as minorities and low-income borrowers. Another local real estate businessman who specialized in short sales agreed, telling Business Week, quote, they were set up, end quote. It's not an unfamiliar story, but it's sad, said Richard Eastern, a co-founder of Bellevue, Washington-based Washington Property Solutions, which negotiates short sales. Quote, we're going to send you off to war, but we're going to foreclose on your home. He said many lenders offered loans they knew borrowers couldn't repay, and it's not just soldiers, it's everybody. We set them up. The extent to which mortgage lenders and banks deliberately preyed on American military families is made clear by this little-known fact. The Tacoma region, home to Fort Lewis McChord, the largest base in the western United States and home to 100,000 military personnel and family, suffered one of the worst predatory subprime loan epidemics in the country, an anomaly in the state of Washington. According to Richard Eastern's firm, roughly half of all home sales in that region are either foreclosures or short sales. As early as 2007, the Wall Street Journal signaled out Tacoma as one of the nation's worst affected regions for subprime plunder. So who did this? Who in the class war equation waged and won this class war on Sergeant Bell's family and so many other military families? What are their names? Where are they now? As a matter of fact, there is a name, Paramount Equity Mortgage. And there is a name, Hayes Barnard, the CEO and co-founder of Paramount Equity. He lives in Roseville, California. In many ways, the story of the winner in this class war is the most revealing and enraging part of it. Paramount Equities was founded in 2004 and quickly spread across the western states, issuing $8 billion in loans. Paramount Equity subprime predation really took off in 2006, and right after the Bush administration's Department of Housing, HUD, and the FHA qualified Paramount Equity insurance on its mortgages. Almost immediately, Paramount Equity flooded the Tacoma region's radio airwaves with deceptive ads, hard-selling refinancing loans featuring the voice of CEO Hayes Barnard, promising the lowest rates, the most honest dealing, giving his personal guarantee. However, a raft of fraud and deceptive charges followed. In 2008, the Washington State Department of Financial Institutions announced it was charging Paramount Equity Mortgage with deceptive lending practices and revoking its license. Paramount stood accused of charging and collecting unearned fees, charging consumers to buy down interest rates without actually reducing the rate, failing to make a required disclosures, and making state and federally required disclosures in a deceptive manner. Yeah, okay. For all this swindling and destruction, including the unconscionable exploding loans Paramount Equity foisted on Sergeant Bell's wife while he was off fighting in Iraq, the state of Washington settled in 2009. Mind you, this is billions and billions of dollars, so they hit him hard. A fine of $392,000 and no admission of guilt. In fact, he even got his license to operate back. This despite the incredible admission in the signed consent that, quote, Paramount admits that during the relevant time period, Paramount did not maintain any books or records, end quote. The end result, Hayes Barnard and Paramount Equity Capital are doing better than ever. He was named Entrepreneur of the Year by the Roseville Chamber of Commerce, the wealthy Sacramento suburb where Paramount Equity Mortgage is headquartered. And last year, the Sacramento Business Journal honored him as one of Sacramento's 40 under 40 leaders. The big payoff came last year when one of the world's largest infomercial firms, Gunther Rancker, bought a significant equity position in Hayes Barnard's company. You might know Gunther Rancker as the company that makes all those annoying Tony Robbins infomercials and Susan Lucci skincare infomercials. Well, Gunther Rancker also owns an equity stake in RealityTrack, the leading foreclosure intelligence source. That's good news for Hayes Barnard because it means he'll be able to wet his beak on the aftermath of the subprime plunder by getting first dibs on the best foreclosure deals. It's a win-win. In this degenerate 21st century version of America, Hayes Barnard exemplifies everything that the current system rewards. The sociopaths and crooks are the winners. Being a winner means you get quoted adoringly in the Sacramento Business Journal. As for the losers in this class war, Sergeant Roger Bales, wife and children are ruined. They have no home. They only own debts to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars, debts owed for life to the Hayes Barnards of this country. The winner, the swindler, is a community hero. As for Sergeant Bales, whom the Army accuses of snapping for no good reason, accusing him of being a drunk or a mental weakness, incapable of handling his marriage or the stress of combat, he might even be put to death. He now sits in Fort Leavenworth Military Prison, charged with the murder of 17 Afghan civilians. The way the one percenter winners see the story, it's all proof that the system is working perfectly. As the National Journal reported, quote, nearly all the National Journal's national security insiders agree that the military justice system can conduct a fair trial of Sergeant Roger Bales. Your thoughts, please. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. There's always mitigating circumstances to every act and action reaction. Isn't it interesting how we never look for the truth? Because if we do, how then would we refocus our energy on this? I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Then your turn. Call in and share your points of view. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to Van from Los Alamos, California. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I listened to your program the other morning regarding Monsanto and the GMOs, and it brought back a thought about the case where the GMOs were planted next to an organic farm, and the birds and the wind blew some stuff over into the organic farm, and this farm, non-organic farm, sued the organic farm for staining their property. What I don't understand is why the organic farmer, didn't sue the other farm and Monsanto for invading his property.
I can't answer that. I will be answering that because I'm going up to Canada tomorrow. I'm going to be spending 3 days filming farmers who've been in battle with Monsanto and what the background circumstances were. So I'll be able to address that. All I know is this. Monsanto is highly litigious. It has an army of white shoe law firms that go after innocent people and can bankrupt them.
Intimidating. Yeah, that's right.
And it's time that we as a... And you know how you help the small farmers that are bankrupted and trying to fight back, and then Monsanto can keep them in court for years? You stop buying their product. You boycott their product. You protest. Right now, we have hundreds of thousands of the people in this audience boycotting Alec and Alec Corporations, boycotting the primary candidates in elections and going to third-party candidates instead, who are and can prove that those third-party candidates can prove that they are clearly populist, not in anyone's pocket, and won't be. Every choice you make has a consequence. When you choose not to drink a Coca-Cola bottle water, that's important. When you choose not to buy a McDonald's, that's important. When you choose not to walk into a Walmart, that's important. But more importantly is when you choose to become proactive. When you choose to write and call and demonstrate, that's where you show your power as individuals and as groups working together. So the farmer is not alone in their efforts. So we're on it. Trust me, I'm all over the country on this, filming it. We have scientists galore, whistleblowers galore, and I'm not afraid of Monsanto. You know how you beat a Monsanto? You get them into court and you go through discovery and depositions, and then you start showing to the world what kind of people they are and what their background is. And you show their meetings with the White House and Obama and how he selected Monsanto's twice, two people from Monsanto, or one from Monsanto and one who was supporting Monsanto as Governor Vilsack, to head our whole food program, which is all pro-NGO. So we have to fight back. At the very least, in Vermont, they're leading a great effort, though not the governor. And in California, they're leading a great effort. And I believe Jerry Brown is supporting this effort to label all GMOs. And you want to see GMOs die a quick death? Label them. Nobody will buy them. So those are just some of the efforts that we're engaged in at this moment. Thank you very much, Van, for your call and for being aware of the issues. All right. Let's say hello to Harold from New Jersey. Hi, Harold. Hi, Harold. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I'm calling about a program you mentioned a while back during your pledge drive. You had mentioned that you had become frustrated with the way dietitians were being trained, and you had started your own program. And I wanted to know if that program is still going on and how I could apply for it, or if it's not going on, can you recommend a really good one in my own state of New Jersey? That's of the high quality, the one you started.
Okay. Well, the one I started, which was credited, and it was through the state of New Jersey, the University of Edison College, and led to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
That was 15 years ago, and that no longer operates. I'm going to get a whole group, and we did 500 graduates out. And then our faculty and myself were exhausted because we were teaching every single night, and it wasn't for profit. So people were making great sacrifices, all the instructors, myself. But we got one entire whole class graduated. In fact, in the accrediting process, we were equated with MIT's master's program. That's how good it was. Now, my frustration today is that having graduated from dietetic school and being a registered licensed dietitian, in addition to a nutritionist, I know what the dietitians know. I know what information they get. I see their textbook, their curriculum. They're grossly unqualified, in my opinion, to be counseling someone on what a person really needs in their body. And also the American Dietetic Association is aligned itself with the major fast food companies. Well, how with any consciousness can you tell someone who is diabetic that they shouldn't be having a particular food if you're getting money from the manufacturer of that food? So what we need now is we need independent, really good quality nutrition counselors. Now, there are some life coaching out there. There are some health programs out there. I've looked at all of them. I'm not satisfied with any. I've worked for 4 years now when I have time to develop a program that will hopefully kick into high gear in September. If it does, I'll let you know. And I've also even offered it to other people to take it and run with it. I've done all the work on it. It's passed all the hurdles of being vetted for its quality. But there's so much on my plate right now, I don't have time to actually do it. Now, maybe in the summer I will, because I'm wrapping up some projects.
Okay.
But just be a little patient, and we'll get to it.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Alan from Brooklyn, your turn.
Gary, is there any way in hell that this government will open up its eyes and try to put surge protectors in these grids?
No, Alan, it's not going to happen. Now, it's okay that they're not going to, in that they haven't done anything for the environment at all, except, offshore drilling, that they did. Arctic drilling, that they did. Signing into law allowing the pipeline, the tar sands, to be exploited out of Utah. The largest amount of tar sands in the United States is in Utah. And then in Oklahoma to go back down to Texas, not out on the coast. That they did to cover up the known toxic effect of the consequences of the British Petroleum oil spill, which has caused shrimp to be born without eyes, and toxins in the dolphins, and toxins in the sea turtles, and toxins in the fish, and rare cancers in the fish, and bacteria that are flesh-eating bacteria from the tar balls that are on the beaches and under the sand and in the water. It's great, you know, to understand the truth. I'm not afraid of the truth, and I'm not disappointed or angered at the truth. It is what it is. The bad thing is to understand that you see the truth and so many other people refuse to acknowledge it. They still believe in it. I call it watching Katrina. That's why I rewrote the article earlier this morning and sent it to my office. It should be up on our website now. That doesn't mean that this story has to have a bad ending. Next week, I'm going to have one program set aside. Just how do you survive if there is a worst case scenario to a solar storm? So I'm going to do that next week.
Okay? Okay, Gary. Thank you very much.
Okay, and please remember, for those of you who are listening to this program, some of you don't have a computer or Internet access. Others cannot always be by land-based radio to listen or in a car. So we have a way for you to listen to my radio program every day over the telephone, anywhere in North America. Call 832-280-0066. That's the phone number to listen to the show, 832-280-0066. How many people are listening? Well, in the last 3.5 weeks, I'm told that it's now up around 700,000 to 800,000 minutes. But also, I want to thank the people who came and read 200,000 pages on our website this week. And that's going to be about 10 million page reads. Normally, people read only sentences, sometimes not even a page, especially younger people. But if you're giving in good quality information, people are going to spend more time reading and all that stuff to read all those articles, about 150 new articles per day on progressive themes. They're every day. Quickly, before I go to Lincoln in Mount Vernon, and then Luann Panessi, who's got your calls, next week we've got some powerful shows. We have our next show is Dr. Martha Herbert, Harvard professor, the School of Medicine, and we're going to talk about natural and alternative advances in the treatment of autism. Then on Monday night at 7 p.m., we have America's Epidemic of Mental Illness and the Corruption of Psychiatry by Martha Rosenberg, Dr. Bruce Levine, and Dr. George Kohler. You won't want to miss that. Then the next day, the last myth. What is the rapid rise in apocalyptic thinking telling us about America and why it confuses our abilities and motivation to deal with factual challenges such as climate change and a breakdown of our social fabric? With Dr. Matthew Barrett Gross, and then we have two separate remarkable minds on the same program. The first half, our national debt, how we got there, and where we're going with... one of the most powerful people in the field, Professor Simon Johnson, a Ronald Kurtz Professor of Entrepreneurship at MIT Sloan School of Management. And the second half of the program will be Richard Davidson. And we're going to talk about The Science of the Brain. And then we have John Perkins talking next week about corporatocracy and global financial meltdown. So you see, we got some powerful shows coming at you. Lincoln, your turn.
Hi, how are you, Gary?
Good.
Okay. In reference to the sergeant and a couple other things, I don't think we should always be excusing these people talking about because they had some kind of problem, they're going to get up and go shoot people in Afghanistan. I think to a great degree it's an American mentality and it's a European mentality to a degree in terms of, you know, like romanticizing American and European history. And to a degree, the people themselves are part of the problem, meaning that the poor don't really care about the poor and the rich don't care about the poor. And if the poor becomes rich tomorrow, they actually join forces with the rich. I mean, you take a simple thing like, you know, a poor person getting a job as a police or a subway worker. Suddenly they become abusive to other people, like insensitive. You have bus drivers who will sit in the winter and it's cold and the people are standing outside and they will be at the bus stop and they have a 10-minute break. And they'll sit in that warm bus, and they wouldn't open that door until it's exactly a couple of seconds before the bus is supposed to leave. You know, hello?
I'm listening.
Yeah, so I'm saying, you know, we the people are a part of it. And the romanticizing of American history, like I was born in Jamaica. You know, when I left Jamaica as a kid, one Jamaican dollar used to be equal to almost 1.5 to 2 American dollars because the American government did not like what the Jamaican government was about to do, Michael Manley was about to nationalize the bauxite, and also because of his political intercourse with Fidel Castro, them and the IMF just ups and sabotage our economy. Now, one American dollar is the equivalent of 88 Jamaican dollars, which means that you're saying that the people in Jamaica, the poor people, were made 88% poorer. And so,
88 times.
Yeah, 88 times, I mean, you know. And then all the violence is occurring down there, and then they want to blame the people and not the government, you know. And we, because now we have a black president here, we want to even more so romanticize American history. We don't want to deal with reality. And, I mean, how can they be calling people insurgents? You invade a people country, and the people is rebuffing you, and you're calling them insurgents. And, I mean, take something like 9/11. The people romanticize American history so much that they don't want to acknowledge the fact that this government had something to do with that. And there's so much more to say, but you can comment on what I've just said.
It's not for me to comment on what you said. This is a talkback segment where I open my microphones for people to share their points of view. Mm-hmm. And in the larger context, I believe that before we make judgments, look at all the surrounding circumstances, then make a judgment. If we make a judgment out of one piece of a puzzle, then we believe that one piece is the totality. I believe that we should offer more patience and look at something. What I'm saying is that everywhere in America, we have people committing suicides by foreclosure, where people are losing their homes and turning their anger, desperation, despondency inward so they feel they no longer have a value in life, so they immolate themselves or they go out in a hail of bullets, knowing the moment they walk out that door, they're going to be people, middle-class people, working people, bureaucrats in uniforms who are going to cut them down as if they're a rabid dog without a second thought, without thinking about why is this person holed up in this house? Why is this person yelling out the window? Why is this person going to commit suicide in a moment? Because they know the moment they step out the door, we're going to put about 3,000 bullets in their head. And we don't stop and ask, why would someone do that? Because we're not willing in our society at this point to ask any deep, hard question. We're not willing to ask, are we sitting on 104 potential Fukushimas? Where are we going to put the people? We're now looking at Japan, who is trying to find a way in China or Russia, the islands that were taken by Russia, of Japanese islands, where they're going to relocate people. They know it's inevitable. It's not, is it going to happen? Japan's going to become a death zone. Absolutely, positively, unequivocally, 100% bet your life on it. In 5 years from now, it will be common knowledge they're relocating everyone they can who already will have been exposed to very high and dangerous level radiation. Why can't we talk about it? Because then we would have to say, what are we doing in Washington, D.C., in Chicago? You got 4 nuclear power plants in Chicago. What the hell are you going to do there? You know, what are you going to do? We don't want to face any truth. And as a result, we live in chronic denial, and the quality of our denial is merely manifested in what we use to distract ourselves from the pain of ever having to grow up and be honest about anything. We're going to say goodbye to those listening over a regular station. However, you can continue to listen. I'm going to take more calls. Luann's on the phone. She's going to talk, and we're going to. You can listen by going to 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066, or go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Sunday night, I'm on at 8 o'clock. Let's say hello to Rich from the Bronx. Rich, your turn. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how are you doing? I was listening to you talking for a while about the foreclosure issue. Well, my situation with Wells Fargo, I successfully sued them with a mechanical lien foreclosure, which is current right now, on the property that I own in the Bronx. It's a double lot situation. And I also contract. They tried to do several things, but they are now in default. I would like to talk to you or your representatives to. I did this pro se.
Okay, then do this. We're always happy to help people. Rich, contact one of my in-house attorneys in New York who specifically helps people on these issues. His name is Scott. Call him at 646-926-5422. Let's say hello to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. How are you doing?
Doing great. Got a lot of good film this far today. Started filming at 6 and going to film till 7 tonight and then on to the next city tomorrow. For those who live out in Kansas, we're going to bring the story not just of the Kansas farmer to light, but those people that the world forgets about when they no longer have gainful employment and they're senior citizens. What do they do? How are they surviving? That story will be filmed tomorrow.
Well, I have an email here from a Doreen from Minnesota, and she asked this. She said she doesn't understand how it is that you have been always at least 1 to 2 years, if not more, ahead of the curve. She's a fairly new listener. She's tuning into ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com now every day, and she says, you were talking about solar flares over a year ago. You talked about the collapse of the Greek and Spanish economy more than 2 years ago. And she said that you even were talking about the dangers of nuclear power plants way before anybody else caught on to it. She wants to know, how do you do it? How do you get ahead of every news media, including what the quote-unquote, you know, the MSNBCs, any news media? She just says she doesn't understand how it is that you get ahead of the curve like that.
Are you familiar with the Clarence Darrow?
No.
Ever heard? Okay. He said, I do not pretend to know what many ignorant men are sure of. When you start hearing that the war on cancer is won by sending in another check or having another appropriation or taking this drug, when we're told that if we read this curriculum that is taught in a certain way, if we're coached to how to take a test and therefore test well, irrespective that we know nothing at all and cannot use what we do not know to help us in life, but we got good grades and therefore everybody can take a bow. When the government says we want a small government that increases the size of it, when we want an accountable government and has massive corrupt bureaucrats that are bloated and morbidly obese, if there's a metaphor, just imagine opening up any office in Washington, D.C., in Albany, in New York City, in Trenton, and seeing a 1,300-pound person smiling at you as they're gorging themselves on money and saying, feed me more. And yet they say they know what they're doing. All I do is simply ask a simple question. Will following in line with what everyone else has done up to this point give me a different outcome than what everyone else has? Tonight, if you're to turn on what is unfortunately the mini-me, insignificant and completely biased current TVs trying to be an equally innate, completely biased, totally stupid MSNBC and all the clowns they have on it, and all you will hear is the same identical stories being selected and talked about from a radically left perspective, or a corporate left perspective, I should say. If you turned on Fox or ABC Network, radio, you would have just the opposite on the right. Same stories, but the right blaming the left blaming the right. Ask yourself, when was the last time any of these people were right? The left and the right both sponsored going into the war in Iraq. They were both wrong. Neither is willing to look at the casualty of what it means to be at the other end of our conquest or our encroachment. As the one of the callers said, you know, we're angry at the people who don't want us in their country. Well, how in the hell do you think the average American would feel if suddenly we were invaded by 400,000 people killing us and droning, killing us and blowing up our bridges and waters and everyone suffered? We would fight back. But somehow if anyone fights back against us, there's something wrong with them, not us. And that's shared both on the left and the right. He mentions we don't have the courage to look at the truth of our participation in 9/11. Now, whether that participation was setting a stage by having 200 years of in the name of democracy, freedom, going into countries and then turning it into self-perpetuating and highly controllable, let's say, privatized interest for corporate American interest, we won't ever tell the truth. Instead, we still believe that we're remarkable. No, we're only remarkable in how unremarkable most of our efforts are. We failed almost everything we do, but we're never honest about it. So if I'm going to be the same as everyone else, if I want to get on Obama's bandwagon or whoever's bandwagon, it's easy to do and you're rewarded. You get suddenly, you belong to the official acceptance groups. You get invited everywhere to speak. You get honorariums and research money. Your books become bestsellers. You have business deals left and right. But patients don't get cured. The environment doesn't get cleaned up. Nothing changes. That's why I choose not to be like any of those people and come up with the results that are universally wrong that they have. We're out of time. Thank you very much. Now, stay tuned for Danny Schechter, the News Dissector, right here on the Progressive Radio Network.